The Brethren of Chaos podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Brethren of Chaos podcast. We're back for another one. We've had we had a bit of a heavy one last time.
Yeah, a deep thinker.
Yeah, a couple of days ago for us as well.
Mm.
We are cramming them in. We're trying to get ahead of ourselves again, aren't we, Steve?
We're trying to build, a buffer.
A buffer, yeah.
In case one of us dies,
yeah.
There's a few to throw out.
As a horrific accident. We can't quite make the podcast. How are you feeling? I'm feeling like a lot better. Like this Monday, well, Tuesday, like compared to last week.
Yeah.
Like I feel better. I feel myself a little
recovered.
Bit.
Recovered.
Yeah, 100%.
Human form.
Yeah, a couple of days off the sauce. I feel all right.
The naughty juice.
Off the sins. I feel okay.
Yeah.
So last week was good. I've not listened to it yet. Normally, by the time we record the next one, I've already well listened to
giggled away.
Yeah, to the most recent release. But this week, no, I've missed it.
Yeah.
What about you? Well, you'd have listened a little bit.
I listened a little bit, but I haven't, not properly.
As
not
you're cutting it all together.
Yeah.
The genius you are.
As I'm editing out... All the dark stuff we're not allowed to have it.
Yeah, as you're bleeping, adding the bleeps. Yeah, so this week, this episode, I'm telling the story a little bit. I've got my water ready because I know my mouth's going to get dry. I'm doing a lot of talking.
And you've got a notebook.
I've got a notebook. With
a proper notebook, yeah. Not just like notes.
No, full notebook, yeah, 11 pages of notes here.
It looks healthy, that notebook.
It's a decent notebook, it is, yeah. Yeah, this is what I bought when I started my new job, and then like a couple of days after I started, they gave me a company notebook. So this is now the podcast notebook.
The podcast notebook. Has it got one of those like ribbon things that you can put in between the pages?
It has.
That's what you
and
need.
It's got the elastic as well that keeps it together.
Oh, shit.
It's a proper notebook.
Yes.
It's a bit of a... So, I was speaking to Steve just before and saying about how this story literally gives me chills. Thinking about it, genuinely, like, it gets to me.
Tragic.
It's tragic, yeah. And that's where I've got to start. It's the tragic love story. Because it genuinely is. And it was my dad said to me. He said, when we started the podcast, one of the first things he said, you need to do one on Michael Hutchins. And I was like, what? Michael Hutchins, I don't know who that is.
Yeah, who's he?
He was going in excess, and I was like, I'm still missing here.
Yeah.
And then you listen, and you know the songs, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
But, do you want me to dive straight in, or have you got anything?
Is your dad a fan of in excess?
I'd imagine so, yeah. I think everyone was back in the...
They seemed like all the songs seemed listenable.
Well, they were massive,
yeah.
And I didn't realise how big they were.
For an Australian band?
Well, not even for an Australian band, just for like the level that they grew to.
Yeah.
And then the crash. It was ridiculous. But yeah, so in excess of the band, the story we're going to talk about is the life of Michael Hutchins, who was the lead singer, but I'll get into it.
Yeah. I'm the Carl Pilkington here.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
So he's got no idea. He knows that, you know, the black and white, don't you?
Yeah.
You've got a silhouette in your mind.
That's it, yeah. Shadow. I've got a shadow.
Yeah. Michael Hutchins is the cliche frontman. He's everything that you'd imagine in a rock star, basically.
He looks the part.
The curly hair.
Give him that.
The good looks, the dress.
Yeah.
He was perfect.
The charisma.
The charisma, yeah. We'll start at like the beginning of his life. He was born the 22nd of January 1960 in Sydney, Australia. An Australian man, an Aussie.
So he's
paradise.
You're already living in a ridiculous country there.
Yeah. And then as you look into like his later life and stuff and what he got on to, you'd think like, what was his upbringing like? Were his parents like? But he had good parents. He had good upbringing.
Hmm.
His parents were successful. His dad, Kel, was a businessman. And his mum, Patricia, she was a makeup artist and quite a famous makeup artist as well.
Ah, right. So they weren't like, I don't know, poor or...
No, he didn't have a tough upbringing at all. He went to private school because his family moved to Hong Kong at one point.
What?
So they moved from Sydney to Hong Kong. Well, they did a bit of travelling around Australia first.
Yeah.
And then they moved to Hong Kong and he stayed there for a couple of years where he went to a private school.
That sounds like a place to be. Hong Kong. In like what? The 60s? 70s?
Like, yeah, 60s, 70s, yeah.
Fucking hell.
Unbelievable.
What What?
And that's where he started like getting into poetry a little bit and
Hong Kong poetry.
Did a bit of singing. Well, he'd have been in private school, so I think he was with all like
Australian,
Australian, American, English kids. So then it comes to 1972. His family's moved back to Sydney, and he befriends this boy called Andrew Farris. And if any In Excess fans will know the surname Farris. So Michael and Andrew, they began jamming together. And that's like where his music comes from, his first conquests into music.
Yeah.
Just singing and stuff like that, having a mess around.
God, 1972 as well?
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to be jamming?
So what's the music scene? Because this is your little...
Well, you got like Led Zeppelin peaking.
Yeah.
Fucking, I don't know. Stones have made it now. The Stones are massive. You got some of the metal stuff coming in. Black Sabbath.
That's what I mean. It's rock, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
You got the Who?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck me.
So they've got this band called Dr. Dolphin. First band, and it's just like a couple of other kids in it.
Yeah. That's an interesting band name, that Dr. Dolphin.
Yeah.
Sounds like a villain. An evil villain. For like a...
James Bond or something.
a children's James Bond.
So that's it. So he's in this little... He's got his best mate.
Yeah.
He's not playing music. He never actually knew any instruments. He was never classically trained in guitar or anything like that. He was a front man. He had the charisma.
Think of the front man then.
Yeah.
You're gonna you've got fucking easy pickings to choose from as well. Who are you gonna base yourself? Who are you gonna jam around?
And he based himself off front men. He learnt off so many, just watching them. So what happens now is his parents get divorced. He's 15. His parents are divorced, and you think, oh shit, what's this gonna do to poor old Michael Hutchence?
Yeah,
but he's fine. He seems okay by it. He spends time in California with his mum, and he loves it over in America.
What, he's gone to California?
Yeah, just for a year. He went over with his mum and his stepsister, and he loved it over there. Everything that was going on, and obviously that in America in the 70s, you're fucking talking.
Yeah,
some decent stuff's going on. But he was always in. He moved back to Australia. He spent a lot of his childhood in Australia.
He's overdosing on vitamin D here.
Yeah.
He was in Australia and California spending his time.
Yeah, in the 70s.
Bloody hell.
Skin cancer's not the tip of everyone's tongue. So that's 1975. By the time 1977 comes along, there's a new band. And the band's called the Farris Brothers. And it's made up of Tim Farris, the eldest brother, and he's on lead guitar. You've got Andrew Farris, who's Michael's best friend.
Yeah, he was in Dr. Dolphin.
Yeah, they've had
Dr. Dolphin.
Yeah.
And then these brothers are like...
Well, the brothers weren't in it. It was just Michael
and
Andrew Farris.
Yeah.
And then a couple of other kids were in Dr. Dolphin.
And then you got the brother in.
And then now they've got the three Farris brothers. So you've got Tim on lead guitar, Andrew keyboard, John Farris is on the drums. So these Farris brothers are musical.
They can play.
Yeah, these can play.
And it seems like they've gone, right, we're not having that name.
Yeah.
We're having the family name.
They're the Farris brothers. Like, come on.
They're assuming control here.
Yeah. So, and then they pulled from Dr. Dolphin, they pulled Gary Beers. And what instrument do you think Gary Beers plays?
Gary Beers.
Because to me, he sounds like a bassist.
Oh,
that's exactly what Gary Beers plays.
Yeah, that's it. He was given that name at birth.
To be a bassist. Yeah,
to be a bassist.
He was born to be a bassist. And then you've got Kirk Pengilly, who is, I think he's one of John's friends.
Yeah.
Who plays the guitar and the saxophone.
Oh, Kirk. I can see a Kirk.
Yeah, Kirk Pengilly.
Being a saxophonist.
Yeah, and then... We're missing some vocals here. Who have we got? We got good old Michael Hutchence. And so we can't play an instrument. And he's like, let's give the singer a go. This is getting serious, by the way. Like, 17 years old.
Yeah.
The band are starting to make the debut. They've got a bit of a manager who's getting involved.
Oh, fucking flying.
It's moving.
Yeah.
So we can't play. He's got the look to be the front man. And the band manager knows this. And he tells him to get weird.
What?
So he starts, like, he's acting. He's playing the persona.
Oh, I see.
I heard something about Bono quoting, like, I played the front man. Yeah. It wasn't me, it was a persona.
Yeah, like an act, a character.
Yeah, but for Michael Hutchence, that was him.
Yeah.
And it was almost like he was playing it and he was told to play it, but at the same time, it was like he was the cliche front man.
Yeah.
But that was him.
Yeah, I get you. He was, he was right in it as himself.
Yeah, he was the front man.
Yeah.
So he like what he'd wear was like he'd wear like velvet capes and stuff like that, and he'd reach out to the crowd, and it was just like it was insane. People said in his early days it was like this guy's going to do something.
Yeah,
special.
He's going places.
Yeah. So there were a couple of stories as well. So he went into a house share as he starts the band, and in the house share they used to call him the Little Prince. That was his nickname.
The Little Prince.
And he only had one proper job. And he was in an electronics factory, and he only lasted 2 days.
Wow.
And so that's like...
Does it say what happened there?
No, he just... Well, I'm guessing he just didn't fancy it.
No, nothing mad happened. Didn't get fired.
No,
didn't
no.
Didn't kill someone day on the job.
He was... No. He was just never made to hold down his job.
Yeah, some people are like that, aren't they?
Yeah.
If you're a born frontman, then I think working in a factory for 5 days
not,
a week is...
It's not for him.
That's never going to go down well.
So he was the born front man.
Yeah.
The band are starting to get some gigs now. He was, and this is a quote, this, he was all charm, all looks. And they said he could be quite shy with women. He could be quite shy, but with women, he was still the front man.
I see.
So he's got this something about him. Yeah. And then I was looking, like, there's interviews where he talks about when he was, like, the girls were never really all over him when he was a kid, but then, like you were saying before, some of the rock bands that are coming through, some of the music that's going on.
Mm.
A nice, cool rock band, obviously talented lads.
Oh, God, yeah.
They're flocking.
He's drowning. So what year is this? Like, late 70s?
Late 70s.
Yeah.
Right now, 1979.
Yeah.
So the Faris Brothers have decided to take a U-turn.
What?
They're changing the name.
Again?
To In Excess.
In Excess. I see. I like that name.
They've gone for it, and it was something about, like, there was a band in Britain at the time.
Was it XTC?
Yeah. And there was a TV show in Australia or something that was, again, like the initials that kind of spelled out a couple of words and stuff.
They took inspiration from that.
And it's catchy. In Excess is catchy.
It suits a band name, doesn't it?
Yeah, and for the listeners who don't know, it's like it's literally the letter I, letter N, letter X, and letter S.
Yeah.
And you say In Excess. And this is where the climb starts to.
Yeah.
So in Australia at the time... There were loads of little mining towns, and they were full of it was full of money in those towns because
booming.
All the people who were doing those jobs were absolutely
raking the money in.
Yeah, they were so rich because no one else wanted to do them, so they had to pay them big money.
What?
So these towns are full of money. This the pub rock circuit, and this is where In Excess are getting big.
Oh yeah, the pub rock circuit as
so
well.
They're doing 300 gigs a year. There's no head counts, no age counts. It's like 40 degrees, it's drink, it's drugs.
Yeah.
And because it's like these tough men.
Yeah.
Like, Michael Hutchence is going up there in a velvet cape, singing these whispery songs, and he had to perform, he had to win over these crowds every single night.
Yeah, so in pubs.
Yeah, in pubs, yeah. With tough miners.
Miners. Yeah, big beards.
Yeah. And In Excess are coming up, and the guy's long, curly hair.
Leather pants.
Yeah, dead skinny, skinny hips, everything. Yeah. Exactly what you're picturing in the front man of a rock band. Yeah.
He's got to put on a show.
He's got to put on a show, and he puts on a show, and he wins them over every night, and it's just building him up. His confidence is sky high. It's almost like at his peak. And then MTV take notice.
The big guys.
Because MTV is starting to get big.
Yeah.
They look at these guys. These have got the look.
They can see the potential.
Yeah. Well, it's the look, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Definitely with like that sort of MTV style thing. It's all image, isn't it?
Yeah. And In Excess starts that they went and supported Adamant in the US.
Ah, yeah.
They supported Queen in the UK.
Wow.
And you think, like, Michael Hutchence is learning off.
Think of them two there are like leaders.
Yeah.
Who he's supporting there.
Exactly.
Who more better... Could you take an eye? Like, you could imagine before the show or after you've played.
Yeah.
And then you're watching them come on, taking notes, seeing how they're doing it.
You're learning from the very best.
Yeah, the top dogs.
Yeah, he is. And so this is where, like, obviously, we're seeing the growth of In Excess here. They've started to release the singles, release albums. All the songs are written by Andrew would write the melodies and Michael would write all the lyrics, all the words, and he just sing random things over the top of these melodies, but it always works.
It always fits.
Yeah, it always fits together.
So he did have an ear for music then.
Yeah.
If you're doing, he's not just like, you're like a front man, but he doesn't have the music side.
No, and we've all seen them, haven't we?
Where yeah, yeah.
Yeah, a front man is just...
he's just an image.
He's just the most confident. Or,
ego.
Yeah.
Big ego.
But this guy's talented as well.
Yeah, if you're writing lyrics and stuff and doing the singing over like that, what you've said there.
Yeah, because the first time I was like reading about it all, I thought that... I thought it was just Andrew who wrote all the songs. You hear about it even with some of the most talented. Like Elton John didn't write any of his songs, did he?
Yeah, yeah.
It's stuff like that. But no, he was writing the lyrics over the top. Yeah. And you listen to them and, you know, they might not... they don't mean... the lyrics aren't that deep, are they?
I don't know, are they?
But, no, because there's, like, songs that really hit you hard, aren't
they? Yeah, yeah.
Like, the performances and, like, the performance of the song, that hits hard because it's, like... because his voice isn't, like, unbelievable, but But, I mean, he still wrote the songs. So, obviously, the band's getting massive. The growth is just ridiculous.
If you're touring with Queen...
Yeah, and I feel like that happens quite a bit, like... that first initial douche, like the first few steps, it's always massive, isn't it?
A big jump.
Yeah, so they're at that point, and then it comes to 1987, and they release the biggest album, and it's Kick.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the biggest one, isn't
Never
it?
Tear Us Apart, I Need You Tonight, all the songs written by Michael and Andrew.
Yeah, just so top-level songs.
Top-level
songs. If the listeners don't know...
yeah,
who we're on about.
100% like, go and listen to them. You'll know the songs.
Yeah, they'll know them. Yeah. They're definitely them type of songs where people are like,
yeah,
have heard them.
Yeah, it's in your mind, definitely. Yeah. So INXS were then, they were number one in America with these songs. I think it was I Need You Tonight, which really got them going.
Mm.
2 years, 10 million copies sold.
What, 10 million? Wait, like try and picture that. Like, how do you put that into like, how do you conceptualise that?
I don't know. I've never seen 10 million people. I don't think I've seen 10 million of anything.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. So 10 million copies sold. They did a 14-month tour.
What? What the... that's a mega tour, that.
And they had
fucking
an INXS branded plane.
What?
For the tour.
That's like fucking... so, yeah, so you hear like bands go on tour in the bus.
Yeah.
These have got fucking their own plane.
Yeah, and it's all the rock and roll cliches.
Yeah.
It's sex, it's drugs, it's drink, it's everything.
Yeah.
Hutchence actually had the nickname the Candyman.
I wonder why.
He used to give out pills, he'd give out lines, and he'd give them out like sweets.
Yeah.
And this is like, obviously, these boys, and I didn't even think of this until I'm reading this now, like 10 million copies, think of the money that they're making. I didn't even think of that.
Like they must even within if you like think of being within that situation as well.
Yeah,
partying like that and all that money.
Oh my god!
Like you're not worried about anything.
No,
aren't you?
No, you're not. You're not even thinking of anything. And that's like there's a point they keep like the drugs in the makeup bags.
Yeah,
and they were called like fag bags or something. But it was like that was the thing. Like the rock stars would wear makeup.
Yeah, yeah. It was just full of drugs as well.
And there was a story of when they were coming off the INXS plane.
Yeah, this party plane.
Yeah, and it's landed, and all like the what is it? What are they called? Like the people, the security who check all your bags and all that. They come up to the plane straight away.
Yeah,
and Michael pulls out this giant bag of cocaine, and he sniffs two massive lines off the table.
Yeah,
everyone's like, "What are you doing?"
What the fuck?
And then he picks the rest up. And he throws it in the air, and he tries to sniff as much out of the air as possible.
What the fuck?
And he just comes; it all comes down. He's just fucking covered in it.
What?
All his hair, his face, all down his clothes.
Now that is so ridiculous.
And they were going to him like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah.
And he says, "Isn't this what a front man's supposed to do?"
What? No, no. Now, in a way, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So what it's like, a response that is.
Do you know what? And it's met like I can't. I've watched the interviews and I've seen the pictures of him.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that from him because he's got like this such like the face of like...
I don't know what you mean. Like, not innocent, but...
No, but not like that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. Not as, like doing stuff like that's extreme.
Yeah, it's wild, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Like I get that he's a rock star and I get that he, like, but that's like... that's and that's not, obviously, that's not a one-off story.
Yeah, that's crazy that...
So that's the level of drugs, and it's constant drugs. It's like there's stories that I'll go on to later where he's backstage at Wembley and stuff.
Yeah.
And passing drugs around to everyone.
So he's by now, they've got to be addicted, haven't they?
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Addicted.
He probably spent his whole life addicted. Because he was 17 when he started, and I bet when you're in those mining towns.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the outback in Australia.
Just travelling around.
Yeah. You need something to get by, don't you?
Maybe, even if you weren't a rock star, travelling around.
I tell you what, though, that's the life, isn't it? Like, you need that to get by. Your party. It's a party lifestyle.
Yeah, that's
it's rock and roll.
Yeah, you can't just be sober.
No, you can't. And you can't just drink, or you'd never fucking do anything, would you? So that's his drugs. The girls. He dated model Michelle Bennett. And you got to remember her for later.
Michelle Bennett.
Michelle Bennett. 7 years they were together. Obviously, it was like in the early times. It was on and off. They were seeing other people a lot.
Yeah.
It was that kind of relationship.
I get you.
In 1989, he started dating Kylie Minogue.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
I guess Australians stick together. Yeah, she gets through a lot of people, though, doesn't she?
She does, yeah. Yeah, I feel like she does. And apparently, what he said to her when they first met was, what are we going to do first, lunch or fuck?
Yeah, he's straight up there. Yep. He's not beating around the bush.
Straight up.
What did she pick?
Who knows?
Both.
So, and then, like, to think of the level of girls. So, obviously, girls are obsessed with him.
Yeah.
He's the front man of a... He could be, like... And, I mean, that's enough sex appeal to start with, isn't it? The front man of a rock band.
Successful
that lifestyle.
Rock band.
Yeah, yeah.
Partying all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. We were in a bar after the races the other week, and there was a band on in Liverpool.
Yeah.
And there was two girls sat there, and they were saying, like, oh, we're having the front man. And it was just a band, they were just playing, like, The Killers and stuff in a bar.
What the fuck?
It's like...
Music, that lifestyle.
That's what it is.
It must be... do you think they're all shallow, though, when you get to that level?
Yeah.
If you're just partying all the time, and all the girls are... Do you think there's any books getting read?
No.
No.
No, you lose a bit of the magic of life, don't you?
Do you think? there's no games of chess getting...
No.
Late night games of chess before
you're not
wind down for bed.
You're not working on your logic skills, are you? So it got to this point where the girls are throwing him. He was at a gig once and a Swedish girl came up to her.
Yeah.
I'm guessing... that the detailed Swedish is that she's a very good-looking, attractive blonde woman.
I presume so, yeah. That would...
And she wanted to take him straight back to the hotel room.
Yeah.
And she said, he was like, okay. And she said, I'm just going to go to the toilet first. Wait here, outside the toilet.
Mm.
And she was in there a while. And when he listened in, she was pissing the tune to I Need You Tonight.
What? Stop there. What do you mean?
Like, she was pitch, that's what she was...
Pitch perfect pitch.
Well, that's what she was doing.
Wow.
And that was his level of girl.
Yeah. Okay, I see.
Which is pretty serious.
Especially with the Swedish.
The Swedish, yeah.
The Swedish girl. The Scandinavian girl.
Yeah, the Scandinavians, that's what it was.
Built like a Viking.
So that's... It's getting crazy.
Yeah.
I think if
we go back to, like, travelling around, like, the pubs and stuff.
Yeah.
In Australia, I feel like that would be wild enough.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you're getting girls thrown at you there anyway, aren't you? 100%.
Yeah.
But now these are, like, Kylie Minogue level.
It's hard to contemplate, I think.
And this is, like these girls that he's seeing, like, there's obviously more girlfriends than just that.
Yeah.
But they're, like, popular girls as well. Mm. So the media love it. He's massive.
I see.
They the couple.
Yeah.
It's all that. And that really plays into what goes on, I think.
Yeah.
Later on in his life.
I get you.
So 1991 comes along, In Excess are massive, as we've been saying. Wembley Stadium. That's what they're playing. Michael's moment. But it's kind of the beginning of the end. It's him and his thousands, and they're locked in together. But all he can think about is listening to Massive Attack backstage and thinking, this is new. This is different. And this is like, this. I say the beginning of the end, it's like In Excess of peaking.
Yeah, that was around that time they were like...
He's at Wembley Stadium.
Yeah.
But he can feel this new music coming up.
Wow.
There's this new front man, there's this Kurt Cobain, there's this grunge rock, this muddy, rough.
If you think, like, you know, loads of people say from them hair metal bands, like fucking, what are they, Poison and what are they called, Motley Crue and all that.
Yeah.
They said, like, the day Nevermind dropped by Nirvana, they all knew their careers were just, like, down the drain.
So that's what he had. He was listening to Massive Attack. He was, and this, like when I was saying before, he's walking around backstage, he's giving people ecstasy tablets.
Yeah.
And he's listening to Massive Attack and he's thinking, this is it. And the word I've got down is in excess were bloating.
Bloating?
Yeah. They were massive. They were an epic band, and like at this Wembley Stadium,
they were swelling.
They spent half a million Australian dollars just to record this show.
Yeah.
They had helicopters. Like
fucking
the
hell.
The six band members had like hundreds of suitcases. They were like this giant. It was almost too big.
Yeah. It's like, it's unsustainable.
Yeah.
Completely unsustainable.
It's like, how can, like, that big? We couldn't imagine that.
No way. I can't even imagine fucking travelling around the pub.
What have I got?
Australia?
What have we got? Like, so they had six of them or hundreds. We couldn't fill like 25 suitcases, could we?
God.
With my stuff.
Not at all.
I haven't got enough stuff.
You got a lot of trainers though, haven't you? You told me you got loads of.
I've got a few, but not enough for 100 suitcases.
100 suitcases.
Yeah, so this is the downfall. The new sounds are coming through. Like I said, Nirvana and Kurt Cobain. Yeah.
Music definitely changed there, didn't it? Around that era.
Yeah, so this is like early 90s.
Yeah.
This is it. And this, the future, this new music, it's overtaken.
Mm.
And it's swamping Michael Hutchence.
Swamping him.
Yeah. It's eating him up.
So he's not feeling good about all this.
No. There's something inside him that's, like you said, the alarm bells are going. Yeah. He knows something, people aren't going to be listening to in excess.
Yeah.
At those levels for much longer. So he goes to Denmark.
That's so interesting though.
Why?
Like, I don't know. Just like the level of awareness you could be in the moment.
Yeah.
Like, I know I said about, like, them metal bands, they all said, as soon as Nevermind dropped, they knew.
Yeah.
But this is a bit different, isn't it? This is, like, a bit of a bigger, like...
Yeah, he's literally...
It's a bit deeper.
Yeah, he's literally at the show.
Yeah.
Backstage, Wembley, thousands of people. He knows it's going to be Michael Hutchence out there.
Yeah.
On, like, I know he's with the guys, but it's going to be him alone. It's going to be all those people. It's going to be so intimate. But he's still thinking... Let me just listen to this Massive Attack.
Yeah, let me see what's going on here.
And it's fucked him up. So he's got this new girlfriend, supermodel, like he was doing.
The Michelle Bennett one, or?
No, this is Helena Christensen. She's from Denmark.
Oh, another Scandinavian girl.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
You know, he picks well. Chooses well.
Mm.
He's in Denmark, and it's late. And this is a major, major turning point, Steve. Like, massive.
Yeah.
So it's late. He's drunk. He's getting into an argument with a taxi driver. He gets out of the taxi and he starts having a fight. And this taxi driver knocks him out.
What?
And he smashes his head on the floor.
Yeah.
Like, proper bounces his head.
Oh, I see. When you get knocked out and you fall, like, I presume fall backwards.
Yeah. Bounces his
head on the floor.
Yeah.
Oh, that's no bueno, that.
He's in hospital for 2 weeks with a severe concussion and he's got brain bruising. And he recovers. But everyone said, it's not the same.
Do you know when we always
hear stories about people...
Head injuries.
Concussions, head injuries, fucks them up.
Yeah. Well, 2 weeks in hospital.
Yeah.
Well, 2 weeks alone, like, you know, with a head injury.
Yeah. He's lost his sense of smell, his sense of taste.
Oh, he's not got coronavirus, has he?
I don't know.
No.
I don't think so. his character's completely changed. People said that, like, he used to be such a, like, an easygoing guy. He's cynical, he's judgmental, he's negative. Yeah.
Well, what's that thing that's, you know, like American football and all that, the head concussions.
Yeah.
And they say, like, you know, all the research in the past, like, 10 years and everything, they say that's all the symptoms, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it's like the level of trauma. But then, like, when you hear Joe Rogan talk about it and he says, like, who are those famous American comedians? I don't even know, but he says they were in, like, car crashes, had head trauma and they came back wild and, like, and that's
crazy.
What made them so,
I see,
so
yeah,
famous.
Yeah.
But
what about Kanye West?
Yeah.
They say that's like, he was normal, wasn't he, before that car crash?
Exactly. I'm telling you, I was worried about my dad after he did this. I was thinking, yeah, he's all right, but what if his man never comes back?
Yeah, but is he all right?
Yeah, he's just boring as he used to be. No, I can't. I take that back because I told him he needs to listen to this podcast.
Should we? We'll edit that.
No, so. No, I just want to apologise for that. So Michael Hutchins, he's had his thing, his career's changed. Gary Beers has come and said he's a dick.
He's a dick.
That's his quote.
The bass player's come out and said...
He's a dick. What? It's not what he was like. Now he's a dick.
Wait, so this accident was in Denmark?
Yeah.
Well, like, and what year was this? About mid-90s?
Yeah, mid-90s.
And that's changed...
Well, early 90s.
Yeah, early 90s. And after that, everybody's like, something's not right here with him.
Yeah.
Bass player's coming out going... He's a dick.
Yeah. But he's still in the band. His band is still going for a good, like, what is it? They definitely go for another 5-6 years.
Hmm.
So he's had all this. It's all getting on top of him.
Yeah.
Like I said before, he's swamped. He's getting eaten up by this. He's had the accident. His personality's changed. His bassist's calling him a dick.
He's probably still on the drug.
Yeah, he's definitely still on the drugs. He retreats to Monaco.
Ooh. That's not a bad place. I've been to Monaco.
Yeah.
I wish I could retreat there.
Yeah. And this is where his guests are like Bono and Prince Albert of Monaco and Johnny Depp.
Oh, fucking hell.
And it's all like too much for him.
Yeah.
And so he's like, it's...
Oh, well...
And he doesn't want it. And they always say that at this point in his life, he was the front man. Regardless of whether he was choosing to be or not.
Ah, I see, yeah.
So these guests are coming round.
Yeah.
And it's everything's just trapping him in. This rock and roll lifestyle, all the cliches.
Yeah.
Have trapped him in.
I get you. He's walled in. By like the everything, the whole, the big picture of everything.
Yeah, and there's points where like he tries to escape. He goes down the road to like, I think it's his manager or like a friend's house in Monaco.
Yeah.
And he just tries to live a normal life. He tries to cut in the grass and stuff like that.
A bit of gardening.
And he just can't do any of that.
Oh, fucking
he tries to go to McDonald's in the drive-thru.
Yeah.
And it said like he couldn't drive. But what he had to do was...
Well, was he always too fucked to drive?
No, he just didn't have a driving license.
Wait, what? That's ridiculous in itself.
So someone had to drive him to McDonald's and then he'd swap seats to order, collect the food.
I see, yeah.
And then they'd swap seats again and drive him back. And what? It's like, why?
What the fuck?
I didn't get that. And that's where it said, like, he was always the front man.
Yeah, yeah. He hasn't experienced normality.
No.
Especially for a long time.
Well, he was 17 when this all started.
Yeah. God, I think that would just mess you up anyway. If you're living that lifestyle.
Yeah, fucks you up, doesn't
you
it?
You can't even, like, go to McDonald's.
No.
No, and you hang around with, like, fucking Bono and Johnny Depp.
Exactly.
They're probably cool to talk with, but I can't imagine... No. If you're at that level to hang around with them...
Having a night with Bono and Johnny Depp.
All the time. Fucking coming round.
I know, what was Bono like? Because Bono talks quite a lot about... Yeah. I think they were quite close.
Well, Bono's got... Oh, he's, like, got the worst ego ever.
Yeah.
Do you remember when, like, everybody got a free U2 album, didn't they?
Yeah, on the iPhones.
It was like nobody wanted it.
Nobody wanted it. You couldn't delete it.
They were literally giving the album away for free.
Yeah.
And everybody didn't want it.
Exactly. So, he's there. He's with Bono.
Yeah.
He's with Johnny Depp and Prince Albert and Monaco, and he's having all this. And this is where we kind of scoot forward a little bit to 1994, and this name, Paula Yates. And if you're familiar with the story, you'll know Paula Yates. She was one of the hosts. She had a section on The Big Breakfast, which is a TV show here in the UK.
Yeah.
Which was like, it was called like Paula on the Bed or something. And she'd interview like famous stars like on a bed.
Yeah, that's such a 90s thing, man. That's like, that could only ever have happened in the 90s. Or like some early 2000s.
Yeah, I know, it's stupid. And you know what? I don't know, you want to watch it, but please go and watch the video.
What?
It's like a 6-minute clip of that interview. It's the cringiest thing. Ugh. It's so awkward.
What, so he's...
They're lying in bed.
Yeah.
She's got like this little dress on. He's wearing like his rock star. And they're like legs are crossed together.
Yeah.
That's what she did with everyone. She introduces it. She says, for the first time, this is a guest I want to have my leg over. And they're all lying in bed together.
Yeah.
And it's so intimate.
Yeah.
This, like... It's almost like...
Is it awkward?
It's painful to watch because it's such a... It's almost like a private conversation.
Oh, I see.
So they're sat there lying in bed, talking, and like they're close to each other's face.
Yeah.
It's like... it's like a conversation that you'd have after sex.
I know what you mean.
It's like that kind of conversation in bed. It just... It felt so weird.
Yeah, yeah. Why is that getting? Why is that getting recorded? Why is that on like TV?
Exactly.
Imagine like you know the one show.
Yeah.
Is it Genius doing the one show now?
Yeah, Jermaine Genius.
Imagine Jermaine Genius in bed with like
Jermaine on the bed.
That's such like a 90s thing. That
it is, and they'd been in excess had been on that the Big Breakfast the year before, I think it was, or they'd been on before, and she'd said it come out that she'd said to one of the producers like, "I will have that boy."
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
So the big thing with
everybody's weird.
The big thing with Paulie Yates at that time. So she's doing this interview.
Yeah.
Her husband at the time was Bob Geldof.
What? Wait. So.
And this Band-Aid, yeah. The Saint Bob Geldof.
And Bob Geldof's wife.
Yeah. Is lying in bed.
Having this weird intimate interview.
And it's on. Bob Geldof owns this TV network. And he's behind the camera watching it.
What? No.
He's watching it all. He sees the whole thing.
Thing is, though, he's weird as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a bit fucked, like. But this is where it comes out. So they have that thing, and then a year later,
yeah,
it comes out that she was having an affair with Michael Hutchence. Paulie Yates and Michael Hutchence.
A bit more than an interview on the bed.
Yeah, they had a bit more than that. So they have the splits. Hutchence splits from Christensen, the Danish model.
Oh, the Danish, yeah.
And Paulie Yates splits from Bob Geldof.
Poor Bob.
They had like three kids together, three daughters together.
Yeah.
She tried for custody of the daughters. I didn't have a chance.
No way.
And the reason she didn't have a chance was one of the maids, a cleaner, found a shoebox under the bed full of opium and pictures of Michael Hutchence and Paulie Yates doing like very private things.
Wait, what? Wait, so Paulie Yates had that under her bed?
Yeah, and the cleaner found it.
Wait, and Bob has been sleeping on this bed as well?
Yeah, well, I couldn't work out whether it was Paulie Yates and Michael Hutchence's bed or...
Oh, I see.
Like, whether it was after the split or...
That's a weird box to have.
Yeah. It's just straight, yeah. To hide it like that. So she's tried, she's failed for custody.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can't...
A shoebox has done her in.
Yeah. It's fucked. And the nation loves, the world loves Bob Geldof.
Yeah.
He's the Band-Aid, he's feeding the starving children, yep. He's the Do They Know It's Christmas Time.
He got loads of money from it. Yeah. He did a good job.
Exactly. So then a year later... Paula and Michael, they have their own daughter, and they name her Heavenly Harani Tiger Lily.
No way.
Yeah, that's what the child is called.
What the hell? That's like either, you're either like ODing an opium,
yeah,
or you're in like some weird cult.
Yeah, so therefore, and Paulie Yates has gone from, like Bob Geldof is like a really respected person.
Yeah, loved guy.
Yeah, loved guy. They were a loved couple.
Mm.
She was like really happy. And now she's gone to Michael Hutchence. She's left Bob Geldof.
Yeah.
Who everyone loves.
Yeah.
She's gone to Michael Hutchence. All this has come out about the opium. Michael Hutchence is a rock star. Yeah. She's getting off a barnet and everything as well.
Yeah, so it's just, she's gone to the wild side.
Yeah, she has. And she gets absolutely battered by the newspapers. She'd gone wild on this. It's a scandal. It genuinely is because... Yeah. It's and what I was reading was it was Paulie Yates and it was Princess Diana.
Oh, I
do
see.
You know, like that level of scandal, yeah. That level of anger against a single person.
I get you, yeah.
And this is what I was talking about when Michael Hutchence is with Kylie and everyone, and he's like, everyone loves the couples, everyone loves Kylie. Oh, yeah. Michael Hutchence, everyone loves Michael Hutchence and Kylie Minogue.
Yeah.
Now he's in this relationship where. They don't like him.
No, they've turned.
Yeah.
They're against.
So he's getting mixed up in all this.
Yeah.
And that's starting his spirals moving a little bit quicker. We know he's already not.
Yeah, he's not healthy. He's not doing good. He's not doing too good. Now he's had this bit weird affair, this opium
fueled affair.
Fueled affair.
So it's humiliation, it's demise, and it just gets worse. I don't know whether you know this, but like, have you seen the thing with Noel Gallagher?
No.
So that's another thing. Like and listeners, genuinely, go and listen to the NXS music as much as you want. Look at pictures of Michael Hutchence. Go and watch that interview with Paulie Yates.
Yeah.
And go and watch this. So he was presenting an award for best album. and Oasis had just come up, New Kids on the Block.
Yeah.
And Noel comes up and he says, has-beens shouldn't present awards to gonna-bees.
What the fuck?
He says it to his face. And Michael, and you watch it and you look at Michael Hutchins and he's like, he doesn't quite get it at first.
I see, yeah.
And then the moment passes and he's like, oh, shit. He's just fucking done me.
Well, to be fair, Noel Gallagher is, like, so quick-witted.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? I fucking love Noel Gallagher.
Yeah, they're both, like, and these were more of, like, the New Kids coming through, yeah, and, like, yeah, swallowing up Michael Hutchins even more, swallowing up in excess.
So his anxiety of, like, this new music and everything a few years before,
yeah,
is, like, it's building on him and everything, he's thinking about it. And then fast forward a few years, and he's given an award to one of these.
Yeah.
And
he says...
And says that to his face.
Yeah.
In front of everybody.
In front of everybody.
Oh, no, no, no.
So I've got written
here.
Oh,
dear.
Michael Hutchins is lost and time is running out.
Oh, God.
It's just getting worse. It's just getting so worse.
That's not a good situation there, isn't it?
It's like the... I don't... That's almost like the passing of the torch.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
It's like that, I'm done here.
Yeah.
Everything's too much. So he's had all the drugs, everything like that. He's had he's been knocked out by that taxi driver.
He's tried to get himself back into a normal life, but he can't do it at all.
He's met Paula, and that's fucking all this newspaper rivalry. The rivalry between Hutchins and Geldof. It's just like, it's getting too much.
Noel, having a quick dig. Cheeky Noel.
Exactly. Cheeky little Noel.
I need to watch that video, definitely.
Yeah, it's like, do you know what? It's a hard one to find. There's a couple, like, it's like people filming the tellies and stuff, but no, it's awful. And, like, loads of it gets like, do you ever watch, like, Live Aid and you see Freddie Mercury?
Yeah.
And it's almost sad watching it because you can tell he's, like, because he didn't, was it Live Aid?
Yeah, when he knew he was going to die.
When he knew he was dying, yeah.
Yeah, and he just wanted to get out there and just fucking do it.
And it's almost, like, really sad. These moments are, like, almost like that.
Because you can tell he's just...
Yeah. Even that, the interview on the bed before Paula and Michael ever got together, you can tell it's awkward, it's weird.
Yeah,
like,
I get it.
He feels awkward there.
Yeah.
It's just, it's strange. So we come forward to the 21st of November, 1997.
1997. So yeah. I was one.
I'd just been born.
You just an infant?
Yeah.
In your nappy?
Yeah.
Well, I would have been in a nappy as well.
Yeah, I was in the May. I was a newborn baby. In excess, starting an Australian tour in 2 days.
So he's going back to his roots.
Smaller venues, smaller crowds.
Oh, I see.
Smaller tour. Hutchins, he wants Paula and his daughter, Tiger Lily, and he wants to bring the Geldof daughters over.
Yeah.
He's like, come and join me.
But Bob, you can stay where you are.
Yeah, you stay over there, Bob. But you guys come and... Paula's not sure. She's like, I don't know if we're going to make it over. He's like, oh, don't worry.
What? Wait, what? Why would you pass up that opportunity? Australia?
I think it's very, very... She's got to be careful what she's doing.
Yeah, yeah. She's on a knife edge.
Not only the newspapers on a case. Bob's on a case. Because he'll just fuck her with everything. He leaves rehearsals that day. He's fine. It's normal. This is on the 21st of November. He goes to the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. And he used to use, like, you know, like, I love those stories about rock stars using, like, different names to book hotel rooms.
Oh,
and
like,
fucking stupid names.
What's that? There's, like, there's films, isn't it? What's the film where they make a, like, they're going through, like, the book of, like, who's in the hotel and they know. It's, like, one of the bands.
Oh, which ones is from the names?
Oh, what the fuck? Oh, I can't remember.
Yeah, but that, they're, like, something, I can't remember what the names were they used, like, but, he could use, like, Muddy River or something like that.
Muddy River.
Something random ones like that. He's having dinner with his dad and his stepmom. So at this point in his life, he's not really talking to his mum. He hasn't spoken for a while. She's off doing interviews, selling whatever she can, selling his story, selling whatever bits.
Ah, she's cashing in.
Yeah, whatever snippets she gets, she's cashed in.
What about the dad?
He's good. He's all good.
He's fine.
Dad, stepmom, they're sweet.
Yeah. That'll be happy with all the chaos, the drugs and the...
Yeah, well...
I mean, you just got to accept it, haven't you?
They're at an Indian restaurant. And Michael doesn't really eat much. He sits there, drinks, and he smokes.
Doesn't like curries.
No, he's not into Indian.
He's not into a vindaloo.
And his dad spots that something's not right, and he asks if he's all right.
Yeah.
Are you okay? And Michael says, Daddy-o, what are you worrying about? I've never felt better.
Hmm.
That's enough to put your dad, settle your dad's nerves, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Put your dad at ease.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fine response.
He finishes the dinner with his dad. He goes back to his hotel.
Goes to the toilet.
Yeah. He goes to the hotel bar. He makes a phone call to Kirk from the band.
Oh, yeah.
The guitar and saxophone player.
Saxophone player.
Yeah. No answer. He leaves a message inviting him to a party at the hotel.
Ah.
As he gets to the hotel bar, he bumps into an old friend and her boyfriend. And they go back up to his hotel. And he says they sat there for hours drinking strawberry daiquiris and just chatting about the kids. And Michael was like, I think he'd done a little bit of acting and he was talking about films he wanted to be in. And yep. He was,
wow, well, I haven't talked about his film.
Yeah.
Well, one of his films.
So that's really normal. Yeah. He seems happy.
Yeah.
5 o'clock in the morning, they're getting tired and they leave.
Oh, so they've had a good talk there, haven't they?
Yeah. So we're at the 22nd of November.
Yeah.
1997
now. In the hotel.
Yeah. In the hotel room. He's on his own. 6 a.m. he rings Paula. Geldof won't let her go to Australia with the daughters. It's not happening.
He's got his grip tightened.
Yeah, it's off. He says in the calls, like, he doesn't want to do another day without his daughter, his little girl. That was like massive for him at the time. Like when Tiger Lily was born, he was like, this is like the best thing ever.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah,
he was in like his he was well into his 30s at this point.
Wait, so that what's her name? Sorry,
his wife.
Yeah,
Paula.
Paula, yeah.
Paula Yates.
She's left Bob.
Yeah,
but Bob is still
got
Bob's, still controlling.
Well, Bob's still got the daughters.
I see. So he's not letting the daughters go.
No,
I see.
And Michael wants them all over there.
Yeah,
I don't know why Paul just didn't go with their daughter.
Yeah,
Tiger Lily. I don't know why, but. So Bob won't let her take the kids to Australia.
Yeah.
Apparently it's like Paul has gone off the rails at this point. Basically.
Well, she wasn't already off the rails.
Well, I mean, like, as she's left Bob, like, it was never out all this stuff, and like there was already conversations with Michael's parents about whether she's fit enough to look after the baby and stuff
right,
that.
Yeah.
So 6 a.m. he's rang Paula. It's been like it's not been a nice phone call. It's quite upsetting.
Yeah.
9 a.m. he rings Bob Geldof, and he's abusive. He's threatening.
What? So he rings Bob?
Yeah. He's screaming that much. He wakes up someone in a neighbouring hotel room.
Yeah.
And that person recalls him screaming, "She's not your wife anymore."
Wow. What?
So like you said about the controlling.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's losing it here, and it was said like, he'd often do this. He'd get drunk and he'd feel lonely and he'd just start ringing people. It was like a normal thing that Hutchins would do.
Yeah.
He'd just start ringing around looking for someone to just talk to.
Yeah, I get
obviously this is getting out of hand because the upset and the emotion behind it, but...
Oh, yeah, it's a big thing, that, isn't it? You know, you got your gig, you got your tour coming up.
Yeah.
Wife can't be there, daughters, stepdaughters.
You're back home in Australia.
You're feeling a bit lonely.
Yeah. So what he does is he rings... Michelle Bennett.
Oh, I see.
His girlfriend of 7 years.
Yeah.
From the beginning of the story.
Oh.
And there's no answer, but he leaves her a message. At 9:40 a.m., he rings the NXS manager, and there was no answer. He leaves a message, and all the band and everything recall him saying, "I've fucking had enough."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, on the message.
Yeah.
I see.
And that's like the part that they recall from that.
Yeah, yeah.
That message. At 9:54, he rings Michelle again, and this time she answers, and he says, "Just as simple as this, I need you."
Oh.
And she says, "It's okay, Michael. I'm on my way." And she's there in 30 minutes.
What?
She gets to the hotel.
What? She's there in 30 minutes.
Well, she's Australian.
Oh, she was already...
in Australia.
Yeah. Wait, still, that's all he said.
Yeah.
And they were going back for a fair bit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think he must have done this before.
Yeah.
He must have rang her before.
She must know the deal.
Yeah.
She must know the score.
So...
That's still, though, you know, you just go, I need it, and yeah. someone just comes well, immediately.
That's the song, though, isn't it? Is that a song?
Oh, no.
Wait, let me just nip back into my notes. I've forgotten with all the shite I've been spouting.
What?
So yeah, I need you tonight.
No, fucking hell. So
that's what he says. I need you. She gets there. She rings his room. When she gets down, there's no answer. She goes up to the room. She knocks on the door. There's nothing. She looks down and there's a note on the floor. And it says, I want to sleep in. So she looks at it, she picks it up. And she writes a note of herself. She said, I'm here. I'm waiting. And she posts it back under the door.
Yeah.
And an hour and a half goes by. And it's like 10 to 12 now. 11:50 a.m. And a cleaner's come to his room. And she knocks. She knocks again and there's no answer. And she's using the master key to get through the door. But as she pushes the door, there's a heavy weight behind the door. And as they get into the room, Michael Hutchence is naked. He's on his knees, leaning against the back of the door with a belt around his neck. And there's no sign of life.
What?
He's 37 years old.
Wow.
So he's found, obviously, there's a panic. Michelle Bennett's there. The cleaner's there. Everything goes on. The band are rehearsing like they were yesterday.
Yeah.
And they're waiting. And they were used to waiting for Michael Hutchence.
Oh, yeah.
He was always late.
Yeah.
He was the front man.
Yeah. Turns up when he wants.
So they're sat there and they're watching the cricket on the TV. And a breaking news comes up. Rock star Michael Hutchence has been found dead in his hotel room.
No.
And they're like, what? It's fucking fake. It's not
what
real.
The fuck? So they're waiting and they see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to believe it, are
no,
you?
No, they're going, it's fucking fake. It's not real. And obviously all the newspapers, all the news are against them anyway because of the whole fucking Paula thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a news camera rushes into the room.
What?
Right into the lad's face. And they're like, going, what's your reaction? What's your, like all this? You got Tim, he throws up. Kirk runs away. He drives to his farm. He gets drunk. He falls into his fields. He cries.
He's dumb.
Andrew was a zombie. He said the words were gone to his music.
He was a zombie.
He
wasn't even a person anymore.
No. He was done. He couldn't write any more music. There was no purpose for it.
I get it. Yeah.
John said he was closest to his age, and he's always wondered why he didn't call him.
I see, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, do you think he's feeling a bit guilty?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, not guilty, but like...
I think the band thought...
I could have helped him a bit.
Yeah, I think the band thought that they were there for him, and...
Yeah, yeah.
It was hard, and no one thought he was suffering, that's the thing.
I see, yeah.
Obviously, there were signs of, like, a rock star's career diminishing, but...
Yeah.
There were no signs of a man who was suffering...
Yeah, I get you.
...inside.
Yeah.
His funeral was at St. Andrew's Cathedral in Sydney. All his family were there, the band were there, all the girls he'd ever dated were there.
Oh, fuck.
Paula was there.
Loads of Scandinavian.
Just half the population of Sweden. Paula was there with the little girl.
Yeah.
They all sang, I can't remember what song, they sang one of the NXS songs anyway, as the band carried his coffin.
What the fuck?
As it came through, yeah.
That was emotional. Everyone was singing God. That.
I don't think... Do you know, it was probably footage, but I couldn't watch that.
No. Yeah.
They had, obviously, the autopsy and everything. There was, like... Obviously, it was... He killed himself, but...
Yeah.
There's always questions. What was answered, but there was no why. Like, why? Yeah. He hadn't left a note. There was nothing like that. The doctor who did his autopsy report wrote, suicide, depressed... drugs, drunk.
Wow, he's really summed it up there. Yes. Bloody hell.
Tim Farris said Michael wasn't the kind of man to quit.
Yeah.
This is what I was saying about, like, they didn't know why.
Yeah, everybody's all thinking, like, what the fuck?
The band were there for him, he'd have come to us if...
Yeah.
And then Bono said, so Bono's chirped in.
Yeah.
See, this would annoy me, this. And this really, really annoyed me. That these lads, like... what was his fucking name? What was the Farris brother who was his best mate?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Right from the beginning.
Right from the beginning.
Dolphin.
When they were
Dr.
kids.
Dolphin.
Dr. Dolphin.
Yeah.
And he's like, he was there for him.
Yeah.
And then Bono's chirping in all the time. Tim Farris says that. Bono says, but he wasn't the sort of man to tell you he was in trouble. It's like, fuck
it off, Bono.
You spent a couple of nights in Monaco with him, did you?
A few parties with him.
I know. It's just all, so that's the tragic of everybody heartbroken, the world heartbroken, because he was getting shit. But then at the end of the day,
at that point, though, he's getting shit. But before that, it doesn't matter what, like, everybody's loved the band, isn't it?
Yeah. Everyone's loved it before everything. You've got to think back to when he was at his happiest, when it was tragic. And that is, like, the tragic love story of Michael Hutchence, but we're not quite finished.
No.
Because we go back to Paula. She's not said anything. She's been out of the game for a year. She hasn't... No one's seen her.
Ah, I get you. Keeping the low down, just dealing with it.
Not dealing with it very well, but...
Just trying to get by.
She does two big interviews. She sells the story. She says Michael died of autoerotic asphyxiation.
Yeah.
Which we know from the belt round his neck and being naked and...
Who else is... There's a few, isn't there, who's been involved in that?
What did Robin Williams...
They say that, don't they?
Yeah. It's a strange one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It is a strange one. She had no peace at all ever since his death.
Yeah.
Newspapers everywhere again. There were arguments with his family over his estate that he'd left to his daughter. And he'd left half of it to Tiger Lily.
Yeah.
And then he'd left the other half to be split between his parents and Paula.
I see.
But they weren't happy about that. His parents sued the band for money.
What? Wait, what? Why are they suing the band?
Yeah. They argued over his ashes, who'd have his ashes. What? They had to split that in half.
What? Split the ashes?
Yeah.
Scooping a spoonful out.
Yeah.
There you go.
Literally had it in half.
What the fuck?
They were arguing over Tiger Lily still, saying that Paula wasn't fit to raise her. There was no peace.
Yeah, it was chaos. Constant. Chaos.
Yeah. It was chaos, yeah. It really was.
And that type of stuff is not what... Nobody needs that after that, don't they?
No one. No matter what you're going through, you don't need that. That's just too much. That's what tears people apart.
Yeah.
He
does a song about that, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Literally.
Do you mean...
I didn't mean to slip that one in.
No.
Paula sleeps. Obviously, she's mourning. She's fucking grieving everything under the world. She's left. She loves this man.
Yeah.
She's got a daughter with him. It's like that life is being snatched away from her. It's almost like, I don't know how she feels, but like it's been snatched away from her. Like that.
Yeah, it's gone. It's just gone.
Everyone thought he was fine.
Yeah. Think like...
And he's in a hotel room and he's just upset that his family can't come out and see him.
Yeah.
Before you know it.
Think like, see, he rings Michelle, is it? Michelle Bennett.
Yeah.
Is that her name?
Yeah.
And, like, she said she's coming, and he's still, like, it's a bit odd that he didn't wait.
Still did it, yeah.
That's a bit odd, isn't it?
She was half an hour, yeah.
Like...
Almost like he wanted her to...
Yeah.
But I don't know, and then he said he's sleeping in.
It's a bit... Oh, God, I don't even know. I don't know. My head's gone, isn't it?
It's fucked up, isn't it?
And, like, he's on that Indian restaurant, and he says to his father, Daddy-o...
Yeah.
Was it? Nothing to worry about or something?
Yeah. I've never felt any better.
So...
He's not reaching out for help, is
no,
he?
No, not no.
Not in an obvious way, anyway.
No. That's like... He's not pushing away, but he's like saying, it's all fine, don't worry.
He's saying things. So he's drunk, and he's saying stuff like, I can't do another day without my daughter, Tiger Lily.
Yeah. Yeah, this is in the night,
snippets,
isn't it?
Yeah, in the phone calls.
Yeah, yeah.
He's saying, I've fucking had enough to his band manager.
So... Do you think, like, so in that night, so he must have been feeling depressed and stuff inside.
Yeah.
And then after he's talking to his friends till, like, 5 in the morning, they leave, he's lonely.
Yeah.
And he just, it fully switches.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's it, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm logging off. Shutting down.
It's too much.
Yeah.
No, anyone he's trying to reach out to can't get there quick enough.
Yeah. Like, he does call a few people, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It's not like he's calling one person.
No.
It goes through quite a few people who are close to him.
Imagine the guilt as well. Like, Kirk rang him as he left the restaurant. to say, you know, party back in my hotel room. Aww. Any of them. All the people I spoke to. Yeah. Guilt. I mean, fucking Paula and Bob Geldof are on the other side of the world, but...
And, see, Bob Geldof, who was the last person you talked to, Bob? It was Michelle, wasn't it?
Yeah, Michelle, yeah, in the morning.
But then before, the last call...
That was answered was Bob, yeah.
Would it have been an argument?
Yeah.
He must have felt weird about that.
That'd be too much, that, wouldn't it? So, Paula, obviously all this has gone on.
Yeah.
She sleeps with the urn by her side every night. And then 17th of September 2000, she was found dead in her house from a heroin overdose. And who found her?
It's not going to be Michelle Bennett, is it?
No. A four-year-old daughter.
Oh, no.
Tiger Lily.
No.
To a phone call. It went to the house and she answered the phone. And she said, Mummy's sleeping.
No, like, what the fuck?
And that was the end of the fucking tragic love story of Paula.
That is so bad.
She was 41 when she died.
Yeah. And how old was he when he died?
37.
Both of them. That's that girl. Both of them. Both her parents died.
In 3 years, yeah.
And she found her mum.
Yeah.
Whoa, man. That is so... And how old was she? Four?
Four, yeah.
See, she doesn't even have, like, the concept of...
No.
Oh, I don't... What the hell, Cal?
What are
you doing it?
It's fucked. No, I just get... It's just genuinely, it's just so tragic.
There's not like any positive out of that at all.
No.
There's no positive to take from that ending.
With Bob Geldof, he legally adopted Tiger Lily.
Yeah.
So she grew up with her half sisters. Yeah, and that's pretty much the end.
Got to the end of your notes there.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's the life.
And I didn't know that end bit then. Yeah. That was like...
See, that's what got me, like, you get it, like, oh, I know it sounds awful, but yeah, rock star kills himself.
Yeah. And then, just to add on the final bit.
Yeah.
His daughter.
Finds his wife.
Fucking hell.
But, no, I just think with this, it's just such a cruel, cruel story of, like, my dad always says that the media killed him.
Mm. Yeah, like, so he was doing good, everybody loved him. Then the Paula thing, the media.
Yeah.
And it just spiralled it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, it was relentless from the media. So, but that's like my dad's point of view, but I think there's so much more, I think.
Yeah, what do you think?
I think it got so big, In Excess got so popular.
Yeah.
They were giant. I think, and all that comes up to that level, and I think him getting that realisation that it's not going to last forever. And then slowly coming down and down and then feeling lonelier and lonelier.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, I think it's...
And he's got, you have to be troubled anyway living that lifestyle.
Yeah.
You're not getting fulfilled.
There's no easy days, is there?
No. Drugs after drugs. Party after party.
Girl after girl, just coming and going.
He must have some terrible sleeps.
Yeah. I don't know if he slept much.
No,
he'd have had dementia anyway.
Yeah, he would have got dementia anyway. No, like, that whole lifestyle is just not set up for healthy...
No, it isn't.
Healthiness.
That is like the live fast, die young, really,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
The literal definition. But it's almost like, I get the drugs. People do drugs like that all the time. Yeah. It's like he wasn't... So, I don't know. I think the loneliness killed him. I think...
I can kind of see that. You know, like,
I think the genuine crash of In Excess.
Yeah.
From that height.
Losing it.
Yeah. Because that's like, let me just nip back when he was at Wembley. Was that 1991? I think it was. 1991 at Wembley is the day he listens to Massive Attack. And he realises that the end's coming. And then 1997. It's like 6 years you've been doing it since 1975.
6 year demise.
Yeah. 1977 was the debut.
Fucking hell, yeah. What the fuck? That's... Wow, what the hell? Yeah, and then last year's is just lonelier and lonelier.
Yeah.
He's with Paula, but It can't, like, from it's what people have said.
Toxic. It's sour, that, isn't it? Soured.
She's a heroin addict.
Yeah, she's fucked as well.
It's not going to be in a good relationship there.
No.
Bob's sticking his foot in the door all the time, I can imagine.
Yeah, I can imagine, definitely.
And that ending, definitely, where he's ringing up people and nobody's answering. He's on his own.
And I don't think it would matter, because Michelle Bennett was half an hour away.
Yeah.
I don't think it would have mattered.
No.
Yeah, I don't think it would have mattered if she was outside his door.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone could have got there quick enough.
He was done.
Yeah. I think he was. It's just fucking tragic, isn't it?
What a tragic story.
It's fully... Oh, it's just...
I feel emotional.
It's so emotional. Like I was saying to you, I listening to the story just like gets chills every time.
God, and that the kid bit.
Yeah.
Wonder what she's like now.
I think she's doing all right.
Yeah.
I think she's changed the surname to Geldof as well.
What?
Pretty sure she has, yeah.
Wait, so how old would she be now? Late 20s?
So she was 4 in 2000. So well, she's like our age, yeah.
Yeah, she'd be our age. Bloody hell. Yeah, I wonder what she's... Because you must be. I don't know. Because you're not going to have PTSD from that.
No.
At four. You're not. You're too young to.
She'll have had an unbelievable upbringing as well.
Yeah. So, but you've got to like. The more you're older, you and start realizing.
Yeah, and the stuff like if it's a normal person, you can be protected from the story, can't you?
Yeah.
But she's going to know that she can read it. She'll have a listen to this. Yeah. Find out all of it.
The whole truth.
I know.
Yeah, so there's no running. She's not running away from any of that.
No.
There's no hiding from any of that.
No, there isn't.
Fucking hell. Do you think she can remember it?
Maybe. I don't know. I never experienced anything that tragic as a child. And I bet it's engraved in a memory.
But yeah. But it's only, like, she must have only realised it's bad afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. She must have done. What do you think then? What do you think it got him?
I don't know what to say, Cal, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think that I can, within the immediate of that night,
yeah,
like the loneliness after all this downward spiral and everything and him ringing people and nobody answering.
You are right. It's just that night, isn't it?
Yeah. I feel
because
like
there's no...
It's really like 5 o'clock onwards.
Yeah.
That's not a good time to be awake, no matter what.
No, it's time to go to bed.
Yeah, nothing good's coming.
And I've been there when you're on, like, when you've been going all night.
Yeah.
And the night, you can feel the night coming to the end, and that doesn't feel good, that.
No.
But I've just gone to bed.
Yeah.
I can't imagine the feeling of trying to ring people.
Nobody's answering.
No one answering.
Think of the room, it must have been dark.
Oh.
And you've got, like, the morning light coming through as well.
Yeah, that's the worst light.
Yeah, you don't want to be seeing that light, don't you, when you've been awake all night?
No, you don't. No. No, it's just...
So I can see, I think that bit, definitely I can see, like, how bad that must have been.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, the media and the change, where everybody's loved him.
Yeah.
He's been, like, the top guy.
And we're forgetting him fucking smashing his head as well.
Yeah, there's that.
I bet that fucked him up.
And
Noel Gallagher.
Noel Gallagher did it in.
Yeah.
I wonder if Noel Gallagher said anything after that.
I wonder, yeah.
What would he said?
I have to have a
little sly comment.
I know.
Yeah, so it's... I think definitely when you've had... like the media and all that, when they got... Like, who's that girl who killed herself a few years ago or within the past 10 years?
Oh, Amy Winehouse.
No.
The girl who killed herself. Whitney Houston?
No. No, the media killed her. Caroline Flack.
Oh, shit, yeah. Caroline Flack, yeah.
They say the media killed her, didn't
yeah.
they?
Yeah.
See, the media is fucking...
Awful, aren't they?
The media is the reason...
It was bad, wasn't it? Because apparently she was battering a boyfriend or something. That's what they spread.
Was it, yeah?
I think so, something like that. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I feel, do you know what, I'd love to properly look into this. I've done my research here over the past week or so, but I'd love to look deeper into, like, looking at the interviews were good, but to look into, like, what were the newspapers saying?
Yeah, what were they actually saying?
What were the magazines saying about Paul, what's the fucking,
Paula Yates,
yeah. I keep going to say Paula Abdul. what were they saying about them? Because it must have been, if it was her... And, like, you see some of the stuff that the media was saying about Princess Diana.
Yeah, yeah.
If it was her and Diana,
yeah,
they were the targets, then it mustn't have been fucking nice.
The media is like the reason why we haven't won a fucking World Cup.
Literally, yeah.
Or a Euros.
I know. That's why I've got rid of all of it, Steve.
Just get rid of it all.
No one should have any.
Shouldn't consume it. The media is like, you're consuming, it's all biased anyway, isn't it? It's all biased. Yeah. They're all just trying to feed you a story.
It's all opinion.
Yeah. So it's just fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
Get rid of it. Especially like the shit, you know, like newspaper ones?
Yeah.
Like what are them newspaper ones?
I can't believe we still print newspapers.
What the fuck is all that about?
Who do we print newspapers for?
Just people who are bored.
Yeah. People who want to do crosswords.
Yeah. Like, you can get, like, think of stuff happening in the news. You can. There's ways of consuming that without it being forced into you as, like, a story to sell you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even, like, the fucking war now that's happening.
I know.
You don't have to, like, know. You know that fucking Putin's gone in to Ukraine.
Yeah.
You know, there's, like, black and whites, isn't there?
Yeah, we don't have to know all the families that are...
Yeah,
being killed
and the way they're trying to force it on as a story rather than just telling you the facts. It's like coming from this angle.
I know.
Let's make you more sad.
We just want to know too much, don't we? That's it. It's just a fucking, the minds of the people just control everything, don't they? That's what it is. It's all, the news is only as direct and penetrative as it is because of the people who are trying to consume it.
Yeah, oh, that's it. That's the same with, like, celebrities.
Yeah.
Celebrities are only celebrities if people see them as celebrities.
Yeah, because of the people... Because of us.
Yeah. If we just fucking wasn't bothered about them.
Yeah.
We just did the film and that's it. Well, they're not like, on that level, aren't they?
No. Yeah, if we were all, like, children. Do you know, like, where, like, a kid would see Chris Evans and think it was Captain America?
Yeah. What, Tobey Maguire is Spider-Man?
Yeah, then we'd all be all right, wouldn't we? We'd all get by.
Oh, my God. I don't know what to think, Al. I'm...
No, I thought...
You've pulled one right out of the bag here.
I wanted a heavy one.
Yeah.
I really wanted to talk about this because it's really heavy and it's the kind of story. When Charles did his Corey Haim one... And
oh, God,
I wanted that same kind of vibe. It fucking... was someone you maybe don't know about, someone we don't hear about enough.
Yeah.
With
an absolute... I know we can say the word tragic, it is...
Yeah.
Like, that sums it up, isn't it?
Yeah, the first words I wrote was a tragic love story.
Tragic
because
love
it's his love story with the nation, with the world, and...
With fame, drugs,
and music, and...
The whole
and the band,
thing.
Everything. Yeah. And then his love story with... it's just with Paula, for that...
So what do you think... What do you think would have helped him? The media not turning on him?
Yeah. I don't know. I think sometimes when you choose that life of rock and roll, like I said before, you live fast, die young, don't you?
You're going to get it.
Yeah.
You're going to get it somehow.
You made it 10 years longer than a lot of other people.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I guess so, when you put it like that.
Yeah. He did.
Yeah, he was just doomed from the start when you pick that lifestyle.
Yeah, I think you are. I think you are doomed from the start, genuinely.
What about, do you think...
Surprised Bono's still there.
I know, yeah.
And Geldof.
Fucking rats. But they're both Irish, aren't they?
Yeah.
They must have something going on.
I know.
Well, what about, you know them type of people... And, like, if he didn't make it as a frontman, say he did the, what was his job where he lasted 2 days?
The electronic factory.
Or he just carried on living a life like that.
Yeah.
It still would have gone downhill.
No.
Do you think he would have just ended up living a normal life?
I think he was good mentally.
Yeah.
I think he would have been all right, from what you hear from the stories of when he was a kid.
But do you not think it would have ate him up that he's got this, like,
ego?
Yeah, he's got this, like, charisma to be something, and he never been it.
Those people just aren't popular in normal life, are they? Like, those people who've got an ego and that confidence. Like, me and you sit here, sit in the pub,
yeah,
and you see that kind of person, you're like, oh, what a dickhead.
Yeah, fucking shut.
Whereas
up.
That person is the star, when you put them in that life.
When you put them in a band.
Yeah.
When you put them on stage.
Yeah, I genuinely think the band and the music and everything, that fame, I think that killed him.
Yeah.
Well, obviously it did. I don't even know why we're having the discussion.
It's not up for debate.
Yeah, it isn't.
No, 100% that lifestyle.
Yeah.
As soon as it's all just drugs and all that.
Yeah, it just soured, didn't it? Really did.
Do you think he was doing any exercise?
No.
No exercise?
No, I can't imagine. Well, apparently... he was a good swimmer when he was in Hong Kong.
Oh. Swimming's nice and
all
chill.
All Australians are good swimmers though, aren't they? It's in the blood.
And they get eaten by sharks.
Yeah. Well, they got to get away from the sharks, haven't they? Oh, Right, I'm exhausted today.
I honestly don't know what to say. No. I'm like,
I've got nothing.
My head's rocked a bit.
As soon as I finished Tragic Love Story, we should have cut it off.
Finished. Yeah. Ended.
How long have we done?
We've done an hour and 15.
Beautiful.
Oh, fucking, you pulled one out of the bag, Kelly.
I know. I feel like I needed to get that out there. I need to listen. I can't wait to listen to this one. What have we got up and coming? Anything? We need to get a new wire so we can get another guest on.
Oh, yeah, we've got a bit of the XLR cable's a bit dodgy. Yeah. It's one of those ones where you have to, like, twiddle it around
a bit. Give it a wiggle, yeah. Good technical issue.
Mm.
But we'll be back.
The only thing I'm doing is fucking turning my head off now.
Yeah.
I don't want to plan it.
Got to go and watch Fuzzy.
Oh, yeah, Liverpool Man U.
Yeah.
That should be an alright watch.
Big game.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll be alright.
We'd be, if you beat him.
Yeah, you don't need to worry.
I don't have to worry.
Right. Should we call it a pod stay?
Do you want to, yeah?
Yeah.
I'm going to say again, I've got nothing to say. Yeah. I'm done, Cal. Well,
thank you for listening to me, Steve.
You've wrote my head off.
Thanks for listening. And listeners, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with some more ramblings.
This was brought to you by Murdley Productions.